are once again the two geezers not at Caesars.
And on the verge of another lockdown, Robert. On the verge of another lockdown.
Well, the lockdown is really of no consequence to me, to tell you the truth.
You've been on lockdown for 13 months, right?
I've been on lockdown for about 23 years. But I really do need a haircut. And
I was going to say.
Well, when you got to tie it at the back, you know.
So if you ever
fly all over the place,
if you ever tie it at the back, I may never turn the camera on.
I have a ponytail right now as I'm talking to you, John.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Do not turn around. No, not turn it, around.
No, I have to, because it sits on my shoulders, and it's like I feel like the Beatles in 1967.
I'm coming over with a giant bowl and a pair of scissors.
You notice I didn't say the Beatles in 1962, because their hair was probably about your length then, yeah, and everybody thought it was
right.
Long.
You're probably.
But then
right.
They got even shaggier, which is where I'm at now. And I'm not opposed to it necessarily, but I'm at the point where it's time. And I thought we were this close, John, this close to reopening the barbershops, and now that's gone. Jason Spezza is going to join us in a little bit, of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Holy, but just a minute, you're having a real live athlete on?
Well, I'm not. You are.
Yeah, well, but
I'm not opposed to it, and I have the utmost respect for Jason Spezza.
No, I understand that, but you philosophically, over the decades that you have worked,
yes,
you shy away from professional athletes.
I do everything I can not to talk to them.
I mean, although I will tell you right now, and because I was thinking about this before we started the show, how many other athletes you've had on in the time that I've been around you, and you have this affinity. You love Siakam, so Pascal, but that was, I almost want to say that was because Pascal was coming in the studio.
It was, that was a bit, and look, there's the odd exception. Siakam was a guy I didn't know from Adam. When the first time he came on with us,
yeah,
he did come in studio.
He and the other kid, was it Pirtle?
Yeah.
Was
that Pirtle, yeah, the center.
Yeah.
Who got traded. And I enjoyed being with him, and we've continued to have, sort of a relationship. But in general
terms, what does that mean?
Well, we talk occasionally.
You and Pascal talk?
Well, I talk more to his agent than I talk to Pascal, to tell you the truth. I can't shut his agent up. Calls me at all hours of the day or night. To rattle on about something, like especially if there's a Raptors game on, and something happened during the game with Pascal, I guarantee you, 1 second after the final buzzer, my phone is going to ring, and it's going to be his agent to tell me, "Well, don't go crazy tomorrow on Pascal. Here's what really happened," and that happens all the time.
You've been burying Pascal a bit, huh?
Well, I think he's capable of a lot more than what he's produced. And I think the whole team is well, I don't know if they're capable.
By the way, lost again, huh?
Yeah. and this whole nonsense about, I mean, Devlin actually said this. When was he on? Monday?
Monday. Don't Devlin bury actually, our buddy Matt. Well, don't
love,
bury
you know
our buddy.
I love Matty D, thousand man.
Come
thousand
on. Games. Come on. He's got that new commercial on the air.
We're talking about, can you make the playoffs? Like, can you get to 10th? And he's talking about 6th.
Well, he was just trying to avoid Brooklyn.
They'll be lucky to not finish last, as bad as they are right now.
Okay, but don't bury our buddy Devlin. Devlin's a good man, you know?
Well, no, but he's a homer, and I love him, but he's, And Grange, who was on with us last week, was kind of stuff.
What are you doing? You've already had this rant. You don't need to do this rant again.
Well, then you shouldn't have enticed me. You should know better than and just
no.
Shut up.
I was just talking about you don't talk to athletes very often, but you and Pascal have bonded. But that was, I really do believe that was only because Pascal was in the studio.
It's 100%.
And then you were trying to tell him, you're trying to teach him how to hit the ball, hit the three pointers. That's what I thought was fascinating. So.
Well, and he's much better since I gave him some schooling.
I guess.
Now, if I can get him to go to the boards and rebound a little bit, They'd be even better off.
Anyway, you have a hockey player. You're going to talk to a hockey player coming up. That's going to be great.
Well, we'll see. I like Spezza. You know why I think it'll be okay? Because he's for a hockey player, he's Moses. He's old. He's what is he, 38?
37, I think. So.
Well, he's old. And he's been around the block, and I think he's got his own opinions on things, and I think we'll actually have a conversation, and it won't be all, you know, the media speak crap that they learn when the teams send them off to, this is how you answer the questions.
Yeah. Defer. Defer.
Or like politicians, just ignore the questions.
Say something. You know, the interesting thing about Jason is that he's had an active role behind the scenes, not as a Maple Leaf player, but as a member of the Players Association.
Well, we should talk about
in the bubble, and in this whole return to play. He's been a very, very big voice for the players. He has been
a significant contributor to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we'll talk to him in just a couple of minutes. Jason Spezza, this time back after this. With Toronto Maple Leaf, Jason Spezza.
Hold on. Do you know this? Jason Spezza, do you know that McCowan doesn't do interviews with athletes? Do you know how special this is?
I didn't know that. So I'm honored, guys. Thank you.
Well, I'll let you know how it goes at the end of it, Spezza. Maybe we'll have you back.
You can rate me and I'll rate you.
Good for you.
Well, look, at off the top, here's where I wanted to go with this. I'm intrigued by your decision to come home, essentially, and play for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I'm wondering how much of the decision that you made was based on that logo, that team, and how much of it was the potential that the club showed when you came here. Or what did it have to be a combination of the two?
Yeah, I think it was a total package. I think if the Leafs weren't in the position that the franchise was in at the time to kind of be looking to make the next steps and competitive and in the playoffs and a team that has a chance to win, then I wouldn't have considered it. Because at this point in my career, I knew I probably had one more spot in me before retirement, and I didn't want to move my family around too much. So it was in. But then with being Toronto in the position they were in, it was a no-brainer for me. I grew up a Leaf fan. I have all my family in Toronto and love being in the city. And it was a great opportunity.
Jason, is that part of the story of earlier this year when Kyle had to make some moves and roster moves and made the waiver situation for you, and you and Rick Curran talked about it and said, if you get picked up, you're just not going to play anymore.
Yeah. I'm just not willing to move away from my family at this point. I got four young girls that are, you know, in a very, you know, transitional ages, and that we want to get them settled in school. And I'm very happy in my situation here and just not looking for change. And with the cap and the taxi squad and all the stuff that's going on this year, I knew that we'd talked before the year that there was going to be something that might have to happen at some point early in the year to give us some flexibility, and just hope that nobody picked me up and we got back to playing.
How much tougher is it at this point in your life, at your age, to go through a full season?
Tougher? I don't know. I think it's exciting. I've enjoyed this season in terms of the travel's been a little bit less with staying in the hotel and playing the same team back to back. I think that's actually made it easier for me in terms of being in the same place for a few days. The west to east travel isn't the easiest. So, you know, you feel a little bit after some of those days, but I got a great wife who supports me and takes care of the kids and gets them off to school every morning and allows me to sleep in and, you know, be a hockey player. And without her, I think it'd be very difficult, but it's kind of a family affair when you try to play, you know, a little bit later into your career.
Yeah. Travel in Toronto, even during the pandemic, isn't near as bad when after those years you played in Dallas. Travel in Dallas is maybe the worst.
Yeah, it's funny. I talked to my wife about this. We find this year's schedule is similar to a Dallas schedule where you go on road trips and then you have homestands and road trips and homestands. Whereas, you know, usually when you play in this division, like when I was in Ottawa for all these years, it's you're home in your own bed by 12:30 half the time on a road game. So definitely a little different feel, but with being in Dallas, it kind of prepared me for that.
Now take this. I want you to take this as a compliment, but the last couple of years in Dallas, I thought you really slowed down, and I would tell you, you found another gear here. Do you feel you're faster now than you were in the last couple of years in Dallas, or is it just my imagination?
No, I feel like this year, especially, I feel faster on the ice. I was, with all the off-season time and the first wave of break, and then only playing 5 games in the bubble, and then having another 3 months to train. I think I really took advantage of it and looked at it as somewhere where I could get a little bit of an edge. I haven't had that big of a training block in a long time. So I credit to our staff here with the Leafs. I trained with the guys here in the rink every day, and they helped me out quite a bit. In terms of, I was slowing down, and I don't know if it's that drastic, it's
no, I wasn't trying to be negative.
Dallas, Dallas, the system's a little different. We bog things down a little more. We're, stacking guys in the neutral zone. I'd say the style of play that we play here suits me well right now. So, but everyone gets their opinion, right?
Well, every time I watched you play in Dallas, you identified it was that you seemed to, once you got to the blue line, you would slow down and then survey what was going on.
Yeah.
And nobody's ever questioned how great a passer you are. So that was your, and let's face it, the puck goes faster than your skates.
Yeah. And I think another thing that isn't really probably talked about, or I transitioned to playing wing a little bit in Dallas. Like, I played center and wing, and up until that point, I had never played any wing. So I kind of, there was times early there where I felt a little bit lost on the wing and standing still too much and not knowing how to get the puck and not knowing how to kind of move off the puck. And that's something that now I've played so much flip-flopping between center and wing that I'm comfortable equally in both spots. So that's helped me too. The changing to a winger 15 years into your career was a little bit different at first.
Is it easier?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Definitely easier. There's less responsibility for sure. Centerman, you have more responsibility down low.
I'm intrigued by getting to the age that you are at. What is it like with your body to the recovery process? We get the sense that when you're 20, 21, 22 years old, your recovery is pretty quick. You have a tough game, a couple of practices, whatever. You can bounce back. And that as you get older, that becomes more difficult. And that would seem natural. But are you experiencing that?
Yeah, for sure. It's I've always been pretty diligent with my body, but I went through some back issues early in my career. And then again, when I was 31, and it was pretty scary for me. Actually, my second back surgery, the recovery was not going that smooth. And it gets you kind of second guessing where you're at in your career and how much longer you'll be able to play. So from that point on, it really becomes the focus. And I wake up every day and I kind of think about how to get my body prepared. And I'm usually the last guy to leave the rink, because after games, you have to take care of yourself a little bit more. And it's a natural progression of being an older athlete, I guess, is that you have to take the extra time.
Actually, what do you mean by that? Because I remember those days in your career in Ottawa, and I used to laugh at it all the time when Jacques was coaching, how many post-game interviews you did riding the bike. Is that whole post-game routine like that? And is it exercise and stretches, or what is it?
Yeah, I still ride the bike, which not as many guys do. I think they ingrained it in me in my Ottawa days. So I still ride the bike quite a bit. I usually try to lift after every game, especially now that I play less minutes. I find after games, when I'm still warm from the game, that it's a good opportunity for me to get some strength work in. And then it's a lot of stretching. I have different routines that I do after games, cold tubs, and seeing the trainers. I just take my time getting out of the rink and make sure I'm feeling good leaving.
Is this team better than what you thought it was going to be when you first came here?
I think we're different than last year's team. I think this year's team is a better version of last year's team in terms of everybody seems to really kind of be on the same page. We've brought in good veteran guys to kind of calm the room at certain times and also give us a kick in the butt when we need to as a group. And when you have multiple voices, I think it helps the whole cause. it doesn't put so much pressure on a few guys to kind of lead that vocally. And yes, I think we're in a good position right now. We're a good team. I think I felt like we were coming to a good team. I don't think I knew how good Austin was. You know, he's the real deal. He's the guy that he's a true number one center. And that's, I think you have to have that and have a chance to win. And he's jumped off the page to me with how dedicated he is and just being that true number one guy. And then now they've put in him and Mitch together. They're, you know, near unstoppable most nights. And that makes us a real dangerous team.
So have you ever lobbied, you know, the Matthews, Marner, Spezza line? Has that ever occurred to Sheldon?
I have not. You'd have to ask him. And but for me, I think there's been times when maybe I could have been there a few times. And I think it's important for me to really kind of be in control of that fourth line and be a good depth line. I'm here to win hockey games. As much as it's fun to score goals and get points, and I feel like that was kind of a lifetime ago for me, and now I'm just trying to be somebody that contributes to wins.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Can you describe your mental state from, let's say, 2007? You're at the top of your game in Ottawa. You go to the Stanley Cup final. How different is your attitude about the game here 14 years later?
Yeah, very different. Early on in my career, you're trying to be one of the best players in the league. You're trying to make Team Canada's. You're trying to win Stanley Cups. We had good teams. I felt like, you know, you're just pushing all the time, just trying to be better and better and better. And then now at the latter part of my career, there was an adjustment phase. There was a period there where it was difficult seeing my ice time go from, you know, 17, 18 minutes to 10. And you don't know how you can get anything done possibly in 10 minutes. And I remember thinking, boy, I got some phone calls to make to some teammates that I had wanting more out of them. It's not easy some nights to get things done in a little bit of ice time. But yeah, it's just a mindset change. And now I feel comfortable in that role. And now I feel like I can accomplish things. And you learn to adjust your game. And you learn that there's some nights when not a whole lot's going to happen, but that's a good night too. So there's definitely an adjustment phase.
One of the things that people talk about as well is one of the reasons you were, I'm sure, brought to this team was, for lack of a better term, senior leadership. And I don't know if that's overstated or not. And then you saw Thornton come in to essentially share that role with you. And even more importantly, the fact that he's older than you are. So you're not the oldest guy on the club. Is that overstated, that leadership thing, that experience that both you and Thornton have brought to this organization?
I don't think so. I think especially in a market like Toronto, where every game there's lots of different opinions on how we're playing and what we're doing, and how a three-game skid seems like the end of the world and a three-game winning streak seems like the top of the world. I think that's where you really need veterans to really be able to evaluate how you're playing as a team, because you know, it's never as good as it looks, and it's never as bad as it looks. It's always somewhere in the middle. So that's where I think it's been helpful having Wayne and Jumbo and these guys around to help with that, to help me and Johnny and the guys that have played. And then the young guys definitely are the owners of this team, in terms of they're the drivers of our team, but they need support, and you can't do it all. And I think it was great moves by Kyle to bring in multiple guys, because it's helped a lot.
I know that when you were in Ottawa, even though the building wasn't sold out all the time, you were the star player, or a star player on a very good team, and a lot of recognition, I'm sure, when you walked around on the streets. You go to Dallas, and I gather it's not quite that same way. You come to Toronto, where I think it probably would be Ottawa times a bunch, but you haven't really experienced that because of COVID. But what's it been like being around this town, being who you are, and with the Leafs playing as well as they have?
Yeah, I think it's fun. I love being kind of in the hopper. I enjoyed my time in Dallas, but you're right. It is different when you're in a southern place. It's, you know, they really respect sports. So as athletes, you get a lot of respect around town, but they don't know the game like they do in Canada. And you know, the negatives are that things get broken down quite a bit, but the positives are everybody cares. And that's kind of cool. You know, everything you do is important. And I think coming back to Toronto, that was something that I felt could rejuvenate my career and allow me to play for a few more years, is just the pressure of every night being good and the pressure of playing in a place. And the chance to win a cup in a city like this, if you can do that, it's pretty special. So I think it's helped drive me for sure.
Would you have warned Joe Thornton about that? I mean, let's face it, all the time that Joe was in San Jose, it was kind of a, like he was in a suburb and it was a fun thing in San Jose. It wasn't the 49ers or the Giants. So it's totally different.
Yeah, I don't know about Warren. I think he knew what he was getting into. He's Joe Thornton coming to Toronto, and he's a guy that if you guys know him, there's not much that fazes him. He's pretty laid back and pretty relaxed guy.
Hey, you touched on something there before about when you talked about yourself and Tavares and Wayne Simmonds. Do you guys ever get together as a foursome to say, okay, how do we manage this? Or does this just occur organically?
Nothing like formal, but we're lots of time together in hotels. So after games, there's conversations. Jake Muzzin's a guy that is a big leader in our room. Morgan Riley, like we have multiple voices, and you kind of go around and you survey the room and see what the temperature is and see if everybody's on the same page. And if it's not, then you kind of mesh those conversations in with each other and you make sure that everybody's talking to everybody. I think what's important is you don't have cliques, and this team doesn't have cliques. And that's, you want to make sure that everybody has the same opinions of what's going on and at least feels the same thing. So formal meetings, no, but lots of, meetings around coffee and, playing cards and conversations, and that's where this year's as a team I think has been really cool and really unique, is there's a lot of time together and there's a lot of time to talk about what's going on as well.
The teams that you played on in the past, when you were in Ottawa, when you were in Dallas, was there one particular leader on those teams? Because it seems there are four of you at least, maybe even more on this team.
Yeah, I think Jamie Benn in Dallas is probably, he's a true captain in this league in sense where he, he's very influential in the city there. He's an ultimate teammate in terms of how he approaches the game. He does a great job of leading. There's a lot of pressure on him there, kind of carrying the mantle as the captain of that team. And then Daniel Alfredson was a strong, strong leader in Ottawa and really, very influential, important person, was great for me as a young player to have a leader like that. That was kind of an everyday guy. That's how I like to kind of explain Alfie, is that he just did things right all the time and just a great person and good family and just a great role model to kind of play with growing up in my formative years. So but even back then, Wade Redden was there. Chris Phillips is a strong leader. Chris Neal, Chris Kelly, like we had a more committee style probably back then. Similar to what we have now.
Not that you should, but you had something really good in Ottawa. There was, you had something special there for a lot of years. When it was you and Alfie and Danny Heatley, that line was the best line in hockey. Do you look back at your time in Ottawa and say, we should have done better, or how do you look at your time there?
I just regret that we didn't win. I just think it's a shame that we didn't win. Our teams were so good for multiple years. We kind of knocked on the door. We got to the finals. My first run, we had the conference finals. We lost in the second round in some heartbreaking games. And with those teams there for a maybe 4 or 5 year period, we felt like we were going to win every night. Like we came to the rink every night and we felt like we were going to win. And it didn't matter what people said about us. It didn't matter. We felt like we were going to win. So I look back and it's a regret. I don't know if I would do anything differently, but it just sucks that we didn't win because we don't have that bond that Stanley Cup teams have because of it. And I've talked with, Chris Kelly about this. He's one of my best friends and he went to Boston and won. And he says, one of the best things about winning is that you get to kind of always get back together with the guys and it gives you a reason to get back together. And we feel like our team in Ottawa has that same bond. We just don't have the reason to celebrate that those groups like we had, like teams that win have.
Did you, in retrospect, was there anything missing on that team?
Well, like the year that our best team was probably the year that Dom Hasek got hurt at the Olympics. Right. I think if he plays, it's easy to say now, but if he plays, yeah, we were unbeatable. He was pretty darn good still at his age, and our team was good and we still had, we were deep. So I think that year, like, that was a tough situation for Razor to go into. He'd never really played much. And then he was a goalie in the playoffs. And then the next year when he was more comfortable, took us to the finals. So I would say that was probably a year that I wish I could have back. And Dom maybe doesn't tweak himself, you know, at the Olympics.
Yeah, it's interesting because there, I look back and, you know, that, that I'm not sure you were on the team. It was before you they won in overtime in Buffalo. That was the coming out party for the Senators, where there was really some growth. Ronnie Tucknut was still the goaltender. That's how far long ago.
Yeah, not that old.
No, I know, Jason. I know. But then when you came, tell you what, you had a deep, deep team. And you could move the puck. You did have good goaltending most of the time. And in many ways, the biggest bugaboo for you guys for a lot of it were the Maple Leafs.
Yes, sir.
You couldn't get past the Maple Leafs. What, three times maybe? And that was frustrating.
Yeah. But I kind of came in, I was kind of the young guy coming in towards the end of that. So okay. I really only had 1 year of that, the last year there when, Neuendijk scored a couple in game seven. That was kind of my only playoff series against the Leafs. And then after that, we dominated them. So it was pretty good.
Jason Spetz is with us. We'll take the quick break and come back with more after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, and Jason Spezza of the Toronto Maple Leafs. You mentioned Hasek and his injury and the importance of goaltending to the Ottawa Senators. It's no different today. I don't have to tell you. And this year has been a bit of a roller coaster ride for your goaltending. What does that do to a team, to a forward, to a player, not knowing who's going to be in that night, knowing you have a couple of guys with relatively limited experience? Does it impact on how you play? Do you tend to be a little bit more defensive conscious?
I don't know that, but I think that's, you know, we're talking leadership, and I think that's where it's been great to have the leadership. It hasn't fazed us that we've had different guys in there every night. To be honest, I kind of feel bad for Fred and Soup. They've both gone through strange years, and the fact that only one, like we went into the year, I think the plan was they were going to split a lot more games and we're going to use both. And we had this depth in goaltending, and it just hasn't come to fruition because they've been both been battling injuries, and one guy had to carry the ball, and Fred played really well for a long period of time, you know, not feeling it 100%, and really carried us to a lot of wins without Jack being available. And then now Soupy's come in and having to do the same thing, and Hutch has had to come in and kind of fill in between. So it's been a tricky year for our goalies. And as players, we just want to bring our best. And we know these guys are coming in and they've been a little rusty at times, and we're playing a lot of hockey. So, you know, you have to be good defensively for them. So I don't know if just a different guy in net changes that. I think it's more so just knowing the situations that we're in. We had guys playing long stretches of a lot of hockey.
How much do you pay attention to the other teams in this division? I mean, you got a lot of off nights.
Yeah.
You can play a lot of cards, but at times you only have to play, what, eight teams to win the Stanley Cup this year. That's the amazing thing. But you're in the middle of playing Winnipeg. They're pretty good. You've had your number. You've had Edmonton's number, but at the same time, they're pretty good. Do you do scouting reports in your head about what makes these other teams so good?
Yeah, I don't know. You guys don't know me well because all I do is watch hockey at night. So I'm not a Netflix guy. I watch the games, and this is a great year for me with the games on every night. So yeah, I watch every night pretty much. I think it's really unique that we're in this kind of original six type division, like we're only seeing the same teams. So I'm watching the same teams every night. I can't say I've watched too many teams outside of our division, you know, maybe to watch some of the players that I enjoy watching. But other than that, it's very focused on just trying to win this division and getting ready for a stretch run here. And there are some good teams, and everybody plays a little bit differently. So it's a challenge.
What's the biggest challenge for the Jets, where you're in the midst of playing right now?
Yeah, their depth. They have great depth. They can make you pay. They're similar to they're a very opportunistic team. Their top two lines, if you make a mistake, it's in the back of your net. Their power play has been together for a long time, so they know each other like the back of their hand. And then obviously the goaltender is one of the best in the game. So lots of challenges there.
you want to win every night, but you know that's not going to happen. At the end, and especially at this point in your career, in your life, you want to win a Stanley Cup. But what does finishing first in this curious division, in this curious time we live, what do you think that means? What does it mean to you, and what do you think it means to the team? Is it important?
I think nobody knows what it means because we don't know. There's no fans in the stands. I don't even know what the playoff format is. Is it going to be 2-3-2? Is it going to be 2-2-1-1-1 in a playoff series? What does it mean? I don't know. But all I know is that we want to be playing good hockey down the stretch. We want to win our division because that means we've won the most games. We don't want to have long losing streaks, but I think it's good that we've gone through a little bit of a blip to kind of have us come out of it and show that things aren't always going to go according to plan. Do I want to win the division? Yeah, because we're playing the games every night and I want to win every night. So we're definitely shooting to win the division. What does it mean? I guess time will tell.
How much is home ice advantage important? Because is there really home ice advantage?
Yeah, I've had it and lost a few game sevens, and I've had it a few times where I wish I had home ice advantage. So
yeah, but that was when there was 20,000 people in the building, Jason.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I don't know. I think that's probably more of a question for Sheldon. He's not a guy that gets obsessed with matchups, and I think we probably play best as a team when we're a little less focused on that. But you'd have to ask the coach, because he's the guy that would probably benefit the most from having home ice is having last change.
Playing in front of nobody as opposed to playing in front of 20,000. You've done it often enough now. Are you used to it? Does it seem almost normal to go into the rink and hear nothing?
Yeah, it's a little bit sad that it is normal now. And when the fans come back, it'll probably feel weird at first.
Yeah.
And those first few games in the bubble were bizarre. It felt like you were playing in a cathedral and nobody was around, and it was like all the echoes and hollow noises. Mm. And now we're used to it. So yeah, it's strange how you can get used to something like that after so many years of playing with fans. If you would ask me in the bubble, I would have told you, oh, we'll never get used to this being quiet in the rink. And now you do. So it's, we adapt, I guess.
Yes. It harkens back to your days of playing midget hockey and there's 17 people in the building, right?
Exactly. And just your dad yelling, move your feet. That's it.
How many practices do you think you've had this year?
Quite a few, actually. With the lack of travel on the road, like on a day like today, normally we maybe wouldn't practice if we were traveling last night. But because we didn't travel, we're going to skate today, later in the day. And so probably a few, I don't know, hard to give a number, but probably more than I thought coming into the season. I know talking with Sheldon before the year, we had thought, oh, there's going to be no time for practice. And I'm a guy that likes to practice. And I think there's been pretty ample time to practice. So it's been good.
Isn't when you're on the road, particularly, isn't needing to get out of the hotel and going to the rink part of a routine that's probably pretty welcome?
Yeah, I think the younger guys now have gotten used to skating less. They don't like to morning skate. They could do without practice. And I don't know, the rest is a weapon is kind of the new mantra around the younger athlete. If you ask me and Jumbo and Wayne, we like to get it moving and kind of loosen the body up and stick with that same routine. Like I still skate most morning skates. Yeah. It's just when you do something for so long, you have to kind of stick with it.
And how much video will you work with? Everybody's got the iPad. Everybody's got something sent to them. And how much studying on the iPad are you doing?
A lot. I watch all my games. I watch all my shifts. Paul McLean's joined our staff this year. He's been a great help with me. We had a previous relationship in Ottawa where he coached me, and he's helped me out in some of the finer details that they wanted to see different in my game. There's a lot of video now. The league, there's a lot of video. The rewind, pause, fast forward button gets used quite a bit. And boy, she looks easy some nights on video.
Hey, I got to ask you, when you talk about video, the new thing is when we see during the game, you guys look watching the pads on the bench. And I don't know how you can watch the iPad and watch the game at the same time. How do you, with your head down into the iPad, you're a guy that watches flow of game all night long. How do you manage that?
Well, usually it's during TV timeouts. You grab the iPad. And I'm sure the clips get used kind of live, but they're usually during the TV timeouts. occasionally you'll see a guy come back to the bench and want to see it instantly. It helps you to find it quicker if you kind of grab it right away sometimes, because you have to rewind it yourself. But you're just look. A lot of special teams has probably been the area where the iPad's the most valuable on the bench. Is just kind of because sometimes how you think you saw something and how it looks can be slightly different. So it does help to have the iPad at times.
So you've had and will have had plenty of looks at Winnipeg and Edmonton and Montreal and of course all the other teams. And you said you are a bit of a hockey geek. So at night, especially on the road, you're watching games. Who else has impressed you that you obviously haven't seen in the other three divisions? The obvious?
Yeah, I think so. Like Colorado is a very, very good team. I think Carolina maybe doesn't get enough chat about how good they are and how deep they are as a team. They're a team that I've seen really take steps. Vegas obviously has great depth. I'd say those are kind of the teams that jump off the page for me. And then Tampa is, they're the champs. They're playing with lots of confidence and they're going to be a tough out for anybody that gets them. So they're the real deal, obviously, and they've proven that.
You will not under normal circumstances have gone to a Stanley Cup playoff or final, or I guess semifinal and final, without having seen the team all year, that you'll have played at least a couple of games against them. What do you expect that'll be like?
You just focus on your own game and you do well in the first two games or first game. And then the coaches will figure out things you need to tweak and adapt, but it'll just put more of a focus on yourself.
And you don't get tired of playing the same teams all the time.
But what's the option, right? What's the point of even thinking about it?
I think
there should be more divisional games as is. I don't think we see, like, there was a swing where we saw it, like, there's probably too many divisional games. And then now I don't know if we see each other enough. I'd like to play more divisional games because I think those are the real rivalries. But yeah, it is different playing the same teams all the time. There's no doubt, but there's no option. So we went into this year and we just said, we're going to deal with whatever comes at us. And if you think you're going to complain this year, then you're going to have a lot of complaints.
Well, we know
I got one. You were part of the original return to play committee. You've been active in this, in ensuring that there has been a season. There was a bubble. You have to feel a little bit of satisfaction professionally, not necessarily as a player, that you know hockey's been able to continue, and you've had a role in that.
Yeah, I take my role in hockey seriously in terms of the fact that I've been around for a long time and seen a lot and been through these labor strifes and this kind of stuff. I don't like to get too involved in kind of the numbers and the money and this and that and everything that gets argued about. But my main reason why I wanted to get involved this time around was there was a lot of apprehension from players of what this was going to look like. And sometimes it's just a little bit of anxiety and fear that, you know, all this change and all this difference is going to be so hard for us. And I really felt that if we could come up with something safe, if we could come up with something that made sense, that we will adapt as players and this will be completely fine and we can get back to playing. And I was worried that, you know, maybe the apprehension was going to come to the forefront. So I thought it was important to be a voice and kind of a calming voice in terms of, guys, we can find a way to play. We can find a way to play that's safe. We can find a way to play that's politically right, that we're doing the right things. We're testing the right way. And then we can get back to just playing hockey. So I think that's why I took a little bit of a leadership role this time around, is not for the money and the dollars and cents and all the stuff that gets talked about, but just to make sure we were playing hockey still.
Last one from me. You mentioned you like the idea of playing divisional rivals more often, and I concur with that assessment. The other one that's intriguing to me is this notion of playing, as you are right now, back-to-back games in the same city. This would never have happened if it were not for COVID. Never in the history of the NHL would a team go in and play two games, not even on consecutive nights, but even on alternate nights. Do you like that? Is there some merit in looking at that down the road too?
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think three games is probably too much in terms of seeing the same team, but the back-to-back has been, I think it's great for players. It's great for our bodies and our travel. It's great for forming rivalries, and it's great for making adjustments. It makes it feel like a little mini series, and you can really hone in on the team.
Yeah.
So I think it's great. I think if next season, if, you know, you play your division six times, say, and, you know, one of the times you go somewhere two games in back, you play the same team twice, and one time you just go once like normal, and then it allows the league to look at it and all the numbers and TV and make sure that it all jives. But as players, I think it's great to play the two game sets against teams.
Well, as an observer, I don't see the downside to it, and I hope they give it serious consideration. Listen, we want to thank you. I know it's a busy day for you, and you got a another game against Winnipeg coming up. I want to thank you for taking some time for us today. It was a pleasure, and continued success with the Toronto Maple Leafs as you march towards the playoffs. Thanks, yeah. Jason.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
How did we do? Did we do okay? Did we do okay, Jason? Did we ask good questions?
Yeah, yeah. Perfect. You guys are great. A couple old pros, eh? How did I do? I hope I was okay.
Jason, just another old pro, Jason. Another old pro.
That's it.
We'll be back in a minute after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, back with you. Our thanks to Jason Spezza for joining us in the middle of games against the Winnipeg Jets. Maple Leafs 3 points up on the Jets now after the win.
Yes, sir. Yep. Three up on them, four up on the Oilers. Oilers did not look good in Montreal. So,
well, and Montreal's still battling for their playoff lives, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and now it's gotten even stranger when you consider Vancouver's now had a game postponed, and who knows how long that will occur for. I wouldn't be surprised to see one of their weekend games postponed.
Well, Montreal, and, if Montreal has any more games postponed, they'll have to play doubleheaders.
Well, so they're going to, you know, Bob, I think their number is they have to play 24 games in 42 nights.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying,
John. It is scary. That's a lot of hockey.
That is a lot. That's well more than one every other night. I also spent some time watching Andreescu play last night, and I don't know if did you see any of her match?
Yeah, I did. I saw some of the stuff in where she put the passing shot, and she didn't even think it was in. And she turned and said, "Did that go in?" And then she started to laugh. And that's when you know you're playing well, is when those kind of shots are going in.
Well, look, you know, she has, I didn't think she played well, but I thought there were a couple of things. Number one, the girl she was playing, whose name escapes me for the moment, I apologize, does not hit the ball hard, but literally gets everything back. Mm-hmm. And a lot of really long rallies, which is not what Andreescu wants. I'm quite sure she's a hard hitter, and she goes for winners, and she got pooped.
Yeah.
She's not, you know, she is not in, for lack of a better term, tournament shape yet. It's going to take her a little while to get into that condition.
Wait, I tell you what, she
at the end of the match.
And not only that, and it, she moves so much and hits the ball so hard, and she puts a ton of strain on her body, Bob. She puts a ton of strain on her body. And you have to wonder, the toll it takes on her body and how long she can keep this up. I mean, I know she's a young lady, and she's a great athlete, but, you know, athletes wear down, and the way she plays the game with such risk and abandon. How long can she keep her body in a position that is not aching? And we've already seen it break down once.
Well, we don't think, you know, we think of contact sports where there's high risk of injury, and there's truth in that. Name me a tennis player who hasn't sat out a considerable length of time because of injuries.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, the best you can't.
No.
Nadal was out for a long time, several times. Djokovic has sat out. Federer has been out numerous times. Now, granted, he's almost 40 years old. But, you know, this game is very difficult on your body.
Well, and
stops,
you know what,
and starts on a hard surface
the hard surfaces that's the one change. You know, you talk about the Beatles in 1962, the difference between tennis in the 60s and the great players grass then is it was either grass or clay.
Yep.
Now it's the synthetic stuff that is sometimes like playing on concrete.
Well, sometimes it is concrete, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And it obviously takes wear and tear. And she's 20 years old and has had, I want to say, three fairly significant injuries already that have kept her out for prolonged periods of time. Mm. And you wonder whether everybody is prone to it. Everybody's going to experience it. But maybe she is going to be one of those who just can't avoid it. Maybe it's
not the way she plays the game right now, Bob. Yeah. Not the way she plays the game so hard, so fast. And whether it's knees or backs or lower backs, my goodness gracious.
Well, she's moving on to the semifinal in Miami, and we'll wish her well. Again, our thanks to Jason Spezza for joining us today. For John Shannon, Bob McCallum, have yourselves a swell evening. And we'll catch you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.